For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Go.
Okay, a quick programming note before we get to today's 5 at 5. Touchdown Club meeting tonight. Dave Johnson will be there next hour from 6 until 7. One of the guests will be a coach you all might be familiar with. His name is Mark Richt. So he'll be joining Dave next hour, as will new running backs coach Thomas Brown. So next hour, Touchdown Club coverage right here on 960 The Ref with Coach Richt and Thomas Brown, scheduled to join Dave live from the Athens Country Club. So don't change your dials after we are finished with you here at the end of this hour.
And Chris, when I think of Thomas Brown, you know what I think of? Great game against Tech in 2007. He and Noshon were a terrific 1-2 punch. In my mind, Noshon and Darren McFadden were the two best running backs in the country that year. And Brown just had a lightning game against Tech. It was 23-17, and he broke one over the right side to score. Then the Dogs got the two-pointer to go up 31-17. So that's my highlight moment for Thomas Brown.
Well, it wasn't until the 09 game with Ely and Caleb King that that whole "we run this state" thing was born. Mm-hmm. But, you know, clearly it had been born long before that. So any memories against Tech are good ones.
Boy, and I was delighted, too, when it was announced that he came back, because there's a guy with Georgia ties, and you know, and all you have to do is like, well, gosh, the guy, he taught Melvin Gordon everything he knew up at Wisconsin.
Clearly.
And I think he'll be a very good recruiter for Georgia.
Well, that's the thing you think about now, Brian McClendon and Thomas Brown going into
younger guys.
Yeah, going into to living rooms now across the state. And Georgia needed something like that in the wake of losing such an ace recruiter in Mike Bobo.
No doubt. Yeah, I think that helps shore that up a bit. And, again, there is no doubt that Rob Sale is paying dividends right now. He got Pat Allen and Sam Madden, and now four commitments. One, Ben Cleveland, was already committed on that offensive line for the 2016 class. Two thumbs up there.
Well, Jeff, let's we'll kind of keep with the Georgia football theme as we start today's 5 at 5, brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution, with some thoughts on G-Day. Let's start with the offensive line. Maybe it's still not in the perfect shape, but I do feel like in the wake of Saturday's game, I mean, you got pretty much your starting five there. I do feel like the depth is much better than it has been. Like, I don't feel like really that's the position there's a whole lot of hand-wringing over, as there has been in years past.
If Georgia can stay healthy there, I like what the Dogs have got. Assuming that Wynn's a center, you got both Kublin Owen Pike back at guard. You've got both Houston and Theus back at tackle. You got Dyshon Sims, who played as a freshman, who can jump in there.
Bynum?
Bynum's coming along there. There's some other younger guys. And I wouldn't be surprised with the three that Georgia's got coming in from the high school ranks. And we'll see with Devondre Seymour if he makes it in. But with Sage Hartigren, with Pat Allen, with Sam Madden, I would expect for a couple of those guys to play. But now all of a sudden you start looking at this, and with the class Georgia will have coming in next year, you know, that offensive line for 2016, when I've guaranteed a perfect 15-0 year, that was my number one concern. Those concerns are definitely getting alleviated some now.
I feel like this year maybe the position where the depth is the biggest question is the secondary.
I agree with you. And I think, too, when you look at it, to win this league, to be in the top five, to be a top four playoff-type team, you got to have all-star caliber players at all three levels on defense and at every position on offense. Now, not everybody's going to make all-SEC, but players of that caliber. So you look at that secondary, who would you save? Dominic Sanders had a great freshman year. Now, Quincy Mauger came up with some turnovers. Who else is there?
Well, I mean,
that's I agree with you. I think that's the biggest area of concern, and that's also where – And it looks like it was a good thing that a lot of these guys, the Harvey Clemens, the Matthews, the Shaq Wiggins, those guys who clearly were bad seeds, they're not around. So it might be a case, Chris, where I would think Malcolm Parrish maybe continues to grow there, and maybe one of the new guys can step in and be an impact player.
Well, Parrish is probably the interesting watch this year, because he was a higher profile name last year than Dominic Sanders was, but it was Sanders that ended up really stealing the show and having more of an impact last season. But now Parrish is working with that first team, but you are still looking at that walk-on. Aaron Davis was starting for the first team defense. And so, you know, you're still in a position where you do have a former walk-on that is atop the depth chart right now. And, I mean, that's not, you know, walk-on succeed and you see that happen, but it's just, you know, there's not that much behind there, though.
Yeah, you hope it's not out of necessity.
Right. You know, and Shadle Fenteg is another player who's injured again, and hopefully he can come back and get healthy for the season. But coming out of the JUCO ranks a year ago, and he couldn't be healthy, though, so we didn't see much of him. But that's certainly the position where depth is the bigger issue. I feel like running back, which, you know, is always an area where guys can get hurt, as we've experienced the last several years with Gurley, even Sony Michel now. But A.J. Terman's had a really nice spring, so you've just added another warm body there, which I guess Georgia needed, because, I mean, he had been moved out of the position, but J.J. Green ends up transferring out of the program, so it hurts in the secondary and maybe even at running back. I mean, remember last year, things were so thin. He was at running back for, was it, the Tennessee game a year ago?
Yeah, he had flopped
one of those
back.
Games.
But now
maybe
it,
Missouri.
That's another loss for the secondary. But, you know, now with Marshall and Michelle being out, and obviously you want to limit Chubb in the spring. So now you got Terman and Brendan Douglas. You know, you feel like you've got good punches there at 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's even if a guy, knock on whatever this is, and the guy would be obviously Nick Chubb, but you've got another five-star in Michelle, so you've got two of them there. But in a worst-case unfolding scenario there, you've got between Brendan Douglas and A.J. Terman, you would still have a pretty potent rushing attack. I mean, that's what we saw 2 years ago when Gurley and Marshall both got hurt. All of a sudden, you had J.J. Green was running for 100 yards in Knoxville. Brendan Douglas was doing a nice job too. But then at a certain point, the injuries did just end up carving you up.
It does. And I'd like to see Quavon run it some too.
Yeah. Now, as of right now, the receiving position is a little beaten up. And Justin Scott Wesley's still coming back. You know, Isaiah McKenzie hurt his hamstring the other day. I feel if there's a position where maybe – well, there's two positions, I guess, really, where – the summer will sort things out with freshmen that aren't here yet. The interior of the defensive line with Trenton Thomas still on his way, and receiver where you've got Godwin and Chigbu still to come too.
Yeah, I would think so too, Chris. And I would think both of those guys that the coaches are looking at as instant impact performers. And when you look at that D-line, you mentioned Trenton Thompson coming in, Daquan Hawkins, a couple of big guys. That's still my biggest concern. Is there enough muscle and beef up on that front? Because you got John Atkins and Chris Mays. I really like both of those guys when you're talking about the big players. But George is going to need some impact there. Two guys, I've just seen a couple of highlights and just some reports I've gotten, though. When you're talking about these young top 10 players in the state, front seven players, Natrez Patrick, who they're working at inside linebacker, and Jonathan Ledbetter on that defensive front. I heard rave reviews about both of those guys from Saturday.
Chuck Samici has gotten
there you go.
Also this spring a lot of good looks too. I think that linebacking, even if you just go where Floyd didn't participate, but between Lorenzo Carter, whatever he ends up being called, and Jordan Jenkins, and even guys like Reggie Carter, that linebacking unit probably going to be the best in the SEC this year. It should be, anyway.
Well, and that's kind of the thing. With Herrera and Wilson, these guys were veterans who made a lot of tackles. Yes, they're going to be missed. They didn't make a lot of plays. So then the thinking is, okay, could this unit actually be better? I mean, Jake Gaines, Chuk Samici, and then obviously with Floyd, Carter, and Jenkins, you got Dave and Bellamy. And now when you factor in Natrez Patrick jumping in there, I agree with you, Chris. I think this position has the potential to be very, very strong for Georgia.
And I think Floyd coming back is, Floyd's coming back not as a guy that's already projected as a top NFL draft pick, he's coming back with the potential to be one. So what you see from time to time with these players that come back for maybe one more season, mm-hmm. that were already projected to be top draft picks, and then you always get this dread where, well,
are they going to play not to get hurt?
Exactly. Whereas Floyd,
that was him last year. In theory, it would have been
possibly. Yes. But now Floyd comes back this season where he's got an eye on, I could be a first round pick, and that could end up paying big dividends for Georgia too. I mean, we've got Floyd and Carter and Jenkins. You've got just three guys back there that should be, hopefully terrorizing quarterbacks quite a bit this season.
Well, and I think the message for Leonard Floyd was with his athletic ability and potential. Yeah, you could go to the NFL right now. You'd have probably been a first-round pick, okay? But you got a lot of work to do. If you come back, put in the offseason, and play well consistently, and prove to be more than a satellite player who can do more than just make spectacular athletic plays, be an every-down type player, you could go from maybe being a first-round pick to maybe being a top-five pick. And I think he's embraced that.
All right, the quarterback spot, how do we feel about that position now that we finally got a chance to see those guys for ourselves? No one got to see them for those first couple of scrimmages. Finally, fans got to watch them. What's our official position on how the quarterback battle will now shape up the rest of the year?
I think Bota's a favorite for numerous factors.
You do?
Yes.
Mostly because Eason is redshirting this year?
I think all things being even, if Bota's the best runner – He's got some experience. He's been using a couple of packages. And with Georgia's running game, even though he might not be the best downfield thrower, you throw in Georgia's running game and his ability to run, that could, in theory, give the passing attack more big play ability. You're going to have to sneak those safeties in to account for that quarterback, too. And then there is the factor of who's waiting in the wings.
Yeah, now Ramsey did appear to have a bigger arm from Saturday. I don't think Coach Richt is throwing any smoke screens up or anything like that. I think he's serious that I believe it's a two-man race now coming out of what we saw this weekend, where the idea that Park is in the mix, I really don't think he's that much of a factor. I think it's down to Ramsey and Bota, and both of those guys are going to play at least in the first two games, where Georgia plays Louisiana, Monroe, and Vanderbilt. And by the way, Monroe's probably the better team out of their first two opponents. If Monroe and Vanderbilt played each other, Monroe would probably win. But it's Louisiana, Monroe. So Georgia's got two preseason games before the old ball coach comes rolling into town.
In a must-win, a burn-the-boats game.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia doesn't beat South Carolina at home, then forget about it.
7-5-8-4.
That's just
years.
Another – listen, the reputation of Georgia's program right now is it's a team that, yeah, is hyper-talented, but at some point you can count on them laying an egg during the year. And if they lose at home to South Carolina, there's your early season egg has been laid.
Yeah, if Georgia loses to South Carolina, 8-4 is a high end.
Yeah. It's just like we said, Clemson turned out to – they were okay again last year, but, coming off a year where they're losing just about everybody on their offense. Now, it'd be different this year because they've got Watson in the fold. Watson wasn't even starting a year ago in the first game of the season. It was still Cole Stout. But, it's just like if you're not going to beat Clemson at home in the first game of the season, you're not going to have a great year. And Georgia did, and ended up having an okay year.
That was a disappointing
Very disappointing, year. Though. It was just maddening.
It was.
The highs and the lows were to such extreme last season.
Yeah, but you can't lose to Tech in Florida and consider it a successful
no.
year.
No, and especially when Florida was,
down.
Horrible.
They weren't horrible.
Tech had a good year.
They were down.
Oh, they were terrible. Come on.
They
Florida.
Weren't terrible.
Yeah, they stunk last year.
They almost beat LSU.
Did they? Yeah, you're right. They did.
Yeah.
They almost lost to Kentucky, too.
That they did. They were down.
Well, they got whacked at home by Vandy 2 years ago. Can I count that in my argument of them being awful?
I got to get a little more Coach Dooley into there. Let's not be so harsh.
No,
Let's
Florida was
they were down.
That was not a good appearance last year in Jacksonville by the Dogs.
Oh, it was. I think it's the worst. All things considered,
that's the worst Richt loss.
It is.
Yes.
And then the Tech loss was just horrific.
Well, I mean, what makes it worse is the two games before and then the two games after where they went to Lexington and crushed Kentucky and then beat Auburn 34-7. And then what they had done the 2 weeks before at Arkansas, Missouri.
I know.
That Florida game is the game maybe in all of Georgia history that makes the least amount of sense.
No, I know. And then Georgia just, you know what, it away the Tech game. Yeah, we all know what
basically
happened.
I can't wait
to go over there tomorrow night.
Oh, yeah.
I just can't wait.
Oh, that's – you need to get somebody to drive you there and so you can be blindfolded and you don't have to actually look when you're going in.
Just can't wait. Is there any chance that game could just get rained out?
Let me check. Let's see what the old –
I think I actually have to arrive over there to get paid. So that could be a time where, for my own sanity, I give myself permissible deception. Maybe I'll go to a hotel. Yeah, I'm here at the park. They have called the game off. We are rained out.
Well, they say Harry Carey used to do that. That he would basically he would make stuff up that was happening because he wasn't actually at the games. The ticker would just come on, and then he would fill it with interesting little anecdotes until the thing spit out, oh, there's a ball two outside. And
there's a base hit to right.
Yeah, there's a good-looking woman sitting in section. It says 80% chance of rain tomorrow.
All right.
And 90% chance on Wednesday, so who knows what it's like. In fact, I'm looking all week.
No, I know. It doesn't look good.
We go 80, 90, 80. And then 80 even on Friday.
And then Saturday and Sunday are high. Bayou Bengals coming to town.
Well, I tell you, when you're considering the five games Georgia has to play this year, maybe a little assist from Mother Nature, or this week, a little assist from Mother Nature wouldn't be the worst thing.
Any way you take it, you would take a winning week this week in a snap. 3-2. I'll take it. I don't care who they cover this. Yes.
Well, I mean, Georgia has beaten Kennesaw this year, but Tech just – beat them pretty
good.
3-2,
no questions asked.
And you got LSU.
No complaints.
And Georgia's 0-6 in the SEC at home.
You got LSU in Florida next two weekends.
Man.
No, not next two, the next two home weekends. A trip to Auburn's in between.
Florida swept the Gamecocks this weekend.
Yeah, South Carolina's and Florida's got its sea legs now. The Mighty Gators are mighty again.
All right, Jeff, let's get on to the Masters in the 5-5 now. A lot of things were impressive about Jordan Spieth's winning week here, but of all the things, the records that he set, the names that were chasing him, to some degree they were chasing him on the leaderboard, what was the most impressive thing about his win to you?
I think the way he never flinched, the way he handled the pressure. He is such an impressive and grounded young man. And I love the symmetry, too, with Ben Crenshaw being his favorite player and his mentor. It was Gentle Ben's last Masters. He wins it in Crenshaw's last Masters. And the last player to finish second one year and win it the next. Spieth did it last year and this year, and it was Crenshaw in 83 and 84. But the guy just never let up. And really the key round for him was what he did Friday to follow up that first round 64, to go hang up a 66. He created the space, and he did what he had to do. And basically, now you and I talked Thursday, then Dave and I were talking over the weekend. His goal for the weekend, and I'm not talking about a guy coming off a bender, was to stay dry, stay out of the ponds, stay out of the water on 12, stay out of the water on 13, stay out of the water on 15 and 16. If you do that, you're probably going to win.
Well, he went in the water on 12 last year playing with Bubba in the final group. Remember, he had a one-shot lead going to 9 last year.
There was over two holes, there was a four-shot swing. It went birdie, bogey, and then Bubba, which I still say him driving the ball on the second 9 last year, that's as good as I've ever seen anybody drive it consistently, and Bubba just killed him from that point on.
Yeah, and but, when you go in the drink at 12 and then you see that guy rip a tee shot down 13 like he did.
He's 80 yards past you.
Yeah.
Again, that's the thing for Spieth. He's so talented. He's not a bomber. I mean, he's long enough, obviously, but he's not a bomber. He's a guy – it would be hard for him to catch up. And once Bubba had taken that three-shot lead, and then like you say, he's 50, 60 yards past him, it's not going to happen. But when he's got a lead, I mean, his short game – and the other thing, too, I like about him not being a bomber, and I heard Charlie Reimer talking about this when I was listening to the radio coverage coming home. He's got that imagination around the greens, which obviously comes in very handy at Augusta. And that's some of what you love about golf when you think back through the years, some of the shots that Palmer and Nicklaus and Watson and Player made, and then that Tiger made and Phil Mickelson made. And Spieth's got that imagination.
Well, very good putting.
Oh,
and
gosh.
Just unflappable almost on those ridiculous greens at times. I know the comparison has been because of the age, because of the number that they ended up posting. I mean, it is very similar to what Tiger did in 97. I don't have as much of a historical frame of references as you do, but just the fact that Spieth won the thing with the number that he did, with Phil Mickelson playing right in the group ahead of him yesterday, and then Rory and Tiger,
I know,
two groups ahead of him. I don't remember the leaderboard when Tiger won in 97, but that's the thing that makes what Spieth did this week all the more impressive, were the names that were still not even really right behind him because he had such a big lead, but it's like all those other guys, they put up numbers. I have no idea, but how many times would what Phil shot, what Rory shot, would have won a Masters to be like 12 under par? Yeah,
majority of them. No, Tiger, because he completely blew everybody away, in that way it was more impressive. But with what happened Saturday with McIlroy, Mickelson, and Woods, that makes his more impressive. I think you said McIlroy, Woods, and Mickelson. That makes his more impressive. I mean, the kid is unflappable. Is he going to win 14 majors? I doubt it. Could he win 5 or 6 or 7? I absolutely think he can. And another thing, too, you're looking at Rory's number one. He's 25. Spieth's number two. He's 21. It's good. Golf's in really good shape. And Mickelson looks like he's still got some really good years left ahead of him. You know, Justin Rose is playing great. Bubba is having another good year. He's a two-time Masters champion. You know what Keimer did last year.
Dustin Johnson's a young player.
Playing great. Golf's got a lot of really good stars right now.
You know, and a guy who had a similar week to McIlroy was Ricky Fowler. Got off to a clunky start, then came back. Ended up, he finished in the top 10, didn't he?
He absolutely did. Yeah.
After McIlroy, he looked like he was going to miss the cut.
McIlroy and Fowler both came on strong, and you know, those guys will be in contention. Ricky's caddy got a lot of attention on Wednesday at the par.
That's
three.
The thing about Spieth, though, is between Tiger and Phil, and Rory certainly looks like he'll be there eventually. You're talking about three of the greatest players in the history of the game. I don't know in 97 if you could say that about Tiger's leaderboard when he blew it away. That
Kite finished second. He was very good, but I mean, it was. He shot a 72 on Thursday, Tiger did. He went 40-32.
Yeah.
And then.
Yeah, because he was like the front nine on his round one. He was 40, yeah.
Yeah. And then Thursday and Friday, he dusted it. And then Sunday, he just grew the lead even more. But that's a good trivia. Kite finished second to Tiger and to Nicholas in 86.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, this leaderboard was incredible. You know, we all just wished it would have been a little bit tighter. I mean, I'm happy for Jordan Spieth. I'm happy for the game. He's a great champion, and I think he'll go on to prove that and win more major championships.
All right, Jeff, will he break Jack's record?
No. But, you know, here's the thing you got to understand. Nicholas was not obsessed with, you know, breaking Bobby Jones' record. And, you know, the definition of a lot of major championships used to be 4 or 5.
Well, I don't know that Spieth is either. The guy that was obsessed with a record was we learned, was Tiger.
Was Tiger. Yeah. It was.
I don't know that anyone else really has been.
So, again, it's like a lot of majors, we used to be considered 4 or 5. Then you start talking about, like, Watson, Player, Hogan, 8 or 9. That's an enormous amount. And then Nicholas is just otherworldly.
Right. And Tiger flirted with it, but he's going to come up short.
Well, the other thing, too, I think, that's so unusual, and now you're talking about the company that Spieth is in with this, the ultra success at such a young age. Nicholas won the U.S. Open at 22, Masters at 23, and the PGA at 23. Tiger at 21. You know, McIlroy won the U.S. Open at 21. That is extremely rare. Now, Hogan was 29, Palmer was 28, Watson was 25 when he won his first British, 27 when he won his first Masters. It's usually your mid to late 20s when the great players do it. So that is some company that Spieth is in, having enormous success at a very young age.
Well, I just think it's, you know, it's funny, after Rory won the PGA Championship last year, and, you know, we would have cuts on, we were joking, because they were talking on the Golf Channel about Rory beating Jack's record. And you realize that Rory has to win still a number of majors that Tiger has won just to tie him. But, you know, so in less than a year, what is it, 8 months?
Yeah.
A 21-year-old has won the Masters, right. And the idea now of McIlroy with a 21-year-old on his heels being able to win that many majors is absurd. But it was absurd even last summer when it was.
And here's the thing. If somebody said to Rory right now, would you take, if one of them is included, if one of them's, at least one of them's a Masters, give you the career Grand Slam, would you take 10 career Grand Slams? He'd be a fool to say no.
Yeah, hands down. That'd be a legendary career.
I'll take six more, and most would, let's say five of them would come in the next 10 years, and then maybe you win one when you get in your upper 30s or 40s. Absolutely.
Yeah, take as many as Phil has. If I was a golfer, I wouldn't worry about Jack. What I would want to do, my goal would be to win at least one of all four of them.
There you go.
That would be it, the career grand slam. Yeah. Even then, you're in pretty limited company. Yeah, five guys. With Phil, he'll be next. He's winning the U.S. Open.
Poof.
Where is the U.S. Open?
Chambers Bay.
Oh, no one's seen that yet, though, right?
And he is the one guy at a great who you do look at and say, and I know how hard they are to win, and I go through these scenarios where Watson could have 14 or 15. You know, Greg Norman could certainly have 7 or 8, and he's got 2. But Mickelson is a guy you look at and you say, how does this guy not have 10 right now?
Well, Tiger has a lot to do with it. Then his own, foibles.
I know.
Yeah. All right, there's the 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.